Shaw here, and today I have the pleasure of chatting to Tim Castleman. I've been intrigued by this young man for some time and confess to having bought many of his products, so it's with great delight I'm able to feature him on GeneShawInterviews.com. If you've been involved in the internet world for any length of time, you'll undoubtedly have heard of Frank Kern, and in many ways Tim reminds me of the living legend. You see, both have a sort of irreverent style and have been known to swear a bit, which I must confess I don't like, but on the positive side, they're both great storytellers, extremely engaging, humorous, and share a tremendous amount of free information before asking for the sale. Today, though, I'm not here to discuss Tim's products, although I can highly recommend them. Instead, I'd like to discover a bit more about the man who makes me laugh and whose emails I do actually still open. So without further ado, let me introduce Mr. Tim Castleman. Hi, Tim. Are you there?
I am, Jean. I got to say, first of all, your voice is absolutely lovely. I could listen to that all day. And what an amazing introduction. And the fact that you would even put me and Frank in the same category, I definitely appreciate that for sure. And I will admit at the very beginning, I will try and keep the swear words to a minimum. They may slip out occasionally. So if I do and people are offended, I apologize in advance.
Well, that's really sweet of you, but I'm not the only one who thinks you're like Frank Kern, as you'll find out later. But I'm sure you're wondering what you've actually let yourself in for, because we've never actually met or spoken to each other before today, have we?
No.
And I didn't provide you with any questions, which is the way I prefer to hold my interviews, because it comes across as much more natural, I think.
Oh, I agree 100%. And I never – here's a little secret. When people send me the interview questions, I usually never look at them. So I'm glad you didn't, because you would have been like, did you look at them? But like, oh, yes, of course I did. I planned my answers well in advance.
Now, obviously, I found you from the online world. And to be honest, I've no idea how I was first introduced to your work. Maybe it was through Jason Flaglian. But you're actually an online and offline expert, aren't you?
Yes, I got my start in offline marketing in 2008. I worked for a large Fortune 100 insurance company, and it was my first big job after college. I had graduated, got my degree, and started working for corporate America. And in a very short period of time, I discovered that I absolutely hated working for somebody else. And as I started to kind of look inward, I thought about all the jobs I had. You see, right out of high school, I actually graduated a semester early. I went into the military. Then I served my country for 4 years, was honorably discharged, went into college trying to actually go to the officer route, hurt my leg in training, and was physically unable, basically, to go back in the military. So then I kind of bounced around from job to job in college, like most college kids do. I worked at a nonprofit. I worked at a small business. I even had a part-time cigar business on the side. And then when I graduated college, obviously I had the full-time job. And what I started to notice when I looked at all of those is they all had a common denominator, and that was that I hated the job. And it's not so much that I actually hated the job. And the other thing was I never really got along with my bosses. And again, it's not that they're bad people. In fact, a lot of them I'm still friends with today. The thing I discovered while working for somebody else is I hate being told what to do. And I hate having somebody else control my schedule. So I made a conscious effort while working for somebody else that that wasn't going to be my lifelong goal. And if that is, like my father, he's a 9-to-5 employee, and he loves working with other people or for other people. I'm definitely not like that. So I started doing offline marketing at first originally for my hypnosis business. I did clinical to, stop smoking, weight loss, hypnosis. And then when I got burnout with that, I switched over to stage hypnosis. So in the matter of about a year, year and a half, I was able to basically double my income part-time working for myself than I was working for somebody else. And, I was making at that time probably about $1,700 a show. So imagine $1,700 for like an hour's worth of work compared to every 2 weeks. I think I was – my before-tax take-home was like $2,100 U.S.
Really? So on the online front, how did that come about with your hypnosis then? What were you doing?
I had always had a fascination from hypnosis from a young childhood. Here in the States, we have the Boy Scouts, and I was a Boy Scout for many years. And they had a magazine. I believe the name was it's either Young Life or Boy's Life. I really can't remember. But in the back of it, they had an advertisement for jokes and magic tricks. And I don't know why magic fascinated me. So I got one of their catalogs, and you know, you get like the whoopee cushion and the smoke bombs. I remember they had this one page flyer called How to Hypnotize, and I bought it, and it was total rubbish, but it planted the seed, apparently, because when I was in college, it kind of came back to me, and I was like, oh, I'd like to learn this. So this is kind of funny. I paid my tuition, and I actually overpaid by one credit hour, which was at that time about $250. So the university sent me a check back and said, hey, Mr. Kasserman, you've overpaid. Well, before my wife at the time could find out about it, I did the totally responsible thing of going on eBay of all places and finding a guy in Chicago who basically agreed to sell me all of his hypnosis stuff for the $250. So I sent him the money and he sent me a huge box of everything he'd ever produced on hypnosis.
Well, that's good. And do you use the hypnosis now when you're with your offline clients?
No, you know, it's funny. People be like, oh, you know, what about NLP? What about this? And I don't want to say that I don't believe it because I know it works and I've seen it work. I don't do that. I mean, I'm a pretty laid back and relaxed type of person. So for me, I'd much rather just be genuine and low pressure and low key than try and be like, oh, I need to do this here and I need to put them in a trance here and do stuff like that. So I probably could if I really wanted to, but I'm terribly lazy when it comes to manipulating offline clients, I guess.
So you don't mirror them? You don't cross your legs when they do?
I don't breathe when they do. I don't try to walk when they do. I don't try to do any open loops or nested loops or anything like that. I've actually tried that more online than offline. And really, I just find it to be a pain because you start thinking like, oh, what about this? What about that? And it's like, you know, what if you just wrote an email from your heart? Instead of trying to manipulate or sell, what if you just told them about why you think this product is legitimately good or what's going on in your personal life or things like that and put a human nature to it. I think storytelling and just being a real person to me is much more impactful in a business than somebody that tries to use tactics or gimmicks to get over on their customers.
Now, talking about your personal life, and you said your wife at the time, you've actually been married to the same lady twice, haven't you?
No. No. Thank God, no. I have not. I'm twice married. This is my last marriage. I joke if this one doesn't work, I'm just gonna say, hey, I tried it two times. My mom, God love her, I think has been married four or five times, and the last one is it for her as well. So no, I married my high school sweetheart right out of high school, and it was a tumultuous relationship when we dated. Somehow I thought it was going to get better when we got married. Turns out it didn't. And we had some great times together, but we were just better off alone than we were together. So then, of course, I do like all divorced men and swear up and down, you're never going to get married again. You know, I'll never do that again. And then what happens through the course of my job, I meet my amazing wife, and I'm like, okay, all right, I'm willing to do this again. And, you know, I don't want to jinx ourselves, but definitely an amazing marriage. I think, and people that have been remarried, I think, can attest to this. Your first time, at least for me, I'll speak personally, you know, I was always taught the traditional model of love, which is you meet a girl, you fall in love, right? You start dating, you get pretty serious, you get engaged, you get married. So I always thought almost like a roller coaster, like once it leaves the port, there's no coming back. You can't say, well, I want to stop, or no, I don't really want to do this. And I really rushed the first time I got married, if I'm honest. And with the second final time, I just said, hey, you know, I'm going to take my time. I want to date you for like 2 years. And the other thing is I was just brutally honest with her. And there's not many women that can put up with me. I'll fully admit that. My wife is lovely in the fact that she does. But I think one of the reasons she does is she understands that I told her from the beginning, hey, this is who I am, you know, and this is who I'm going to be. And if you like that, that's amazing and wonderful. And if you don't, I totally respect that as well. But I'm not going to change who I am as a person. And I think I was a lot more sure of myself, who I was, and who I wasn't going to be the second time.
So that's why you call her princess.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Yes, yeah. And spell her, you know, and the other thing is this, you know, I make it sound like the one-sided thing. When I thought about quitting my job, you know, I had done all the things I was supposed to do. I had planned for it. I had paid off all my debt. I had money in savings, but I just kept, like, not taking that final step. And I'll never forget being called into my boss's office and basically, you know, being told, hey, you have the option here. You know, you can quit or we can fire you. It is kind of what I felt like it was. And she said, you know what? You're miserable there. I want you to quit. And here's the deal. We weren't even married at the time. We were engaged. We were going to get married a few months later. She said, if you quit and things aren't perfect at the beginning, I'll support you. I'll, you know, I'll do what I can financially to help you out. And that's when I knew. I was like, any woman that's willing to do that and support their spouse, and the same goes for guys and girls, but anybody who really encourages your dreams and says absolutely, that's a person you need to hold on to in your life. And she's done that. You know, I'll say, hey, I've got to go to this conference, or I just returned from a trip to China, you know, and I've never heard her say no. Like, oh, no, you know, she of course misses me and would love for me to stay home, but if I'm like, hey, I have to do this for business, she's like, I totally understand. Just let me know when you get back, type thing.
That's certainly the case for most people that I've talked to online. If you have a supportive partner, it certainly benefits you both, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Well, here's the thing, and this is just my belief. You know, if you don't have a supportive partner, it's never going to happen. You know, if you're trying to be on a webinar, or you're trying to actually go through a course, or you're trying to, you know, you need a little money to send out a direct mail piece or send a gift to someone to try and have them become affiliate, whatever it is, you know, you need someone that's going to understand the long-term plan. Now, here's the thing. You need to explain the plan, because I'll be fully honest. My wife was not exactly thrilled at the premonition that I was going to give up my stable and secure job that had full benefits and a retirement and a 401k and all that stuff to do this crazy marketing thing that she had never heard of. But once I sat down and explained to her and showed her that I could be financially responsible and that, you know, that I wasn't going to put us in a lurch and that I was good with money management and people management, then she got behind it. I think what a lot of people do, there's two critical errors, I think. One is they don't explain to their spouse what the end goal is, which is, look, honey, we're going to sacrifice a little bit right now. Maybe I can't be the best husband and father one night a week. I've got to do my thing. I've got to study. I've got to write copy. I've got to put a product together, whatever. But here's why I'm doing that. And I think if you do that, that explains a lot, and people will get a lot of value out of that. So that's mistake number one. Mistake number two is when they start making a little bit of money, they want to reinvest it in the business. And I'm all for that, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, I recommend you take every dollar you can, save it or reinvest it. But what I also think you should do is set aside a 10% fund for your fund. And what I used to do, even when I made little money, and by that I mean a few hundred to a few thousand dollars a month online, what I would always do is once a month I'd take my then-girlfriend, now wife, out to dinner, and when the check came, I'd say, hey, you know what? I'm going to let the business pay for this. And by doing that, it let her see, like, wow, this thing is making some money. And although it may not be the most awesome thing right this second, I can see with this tangible thing that we were able to go out to a nice meal or buy a nice bottle of wine or, you know, eventually go on fancy trips or buy endless Coach purses or shoes or necklaces, you know. So I think if you do those two things, you really can get your spouse on board with you.
Mm-hmm. So did all those brilliant ideas, did they come from your book, I Can Teach You to Be Rich, the summary that you did?
No, God, no. I actually heard I heard the suggestion to spoil your wife from a fellow marketer at a conference, and it just stuck. The other thing that really, for me, my biggest financial influence is Dave Ramsey. I really like Dave. I listened to him back and forth when I was driving because I had a two-hour commute, and he really taught me money management. It's pretty sad in this day and age that you have to listen to a radio show to really prepare yourself financially, but I bought one of his books called The Total Money Makeover, and I just followed it. And, you know, guys, you can pick it up, but I'll give you the basic. And it's basically You know, earn money, spend less than you make, save $1,000 per, you know, for an emergency fund, then save 3 to 6 months worth of your income, or excuse me, your expenses, then start funding your retirement, then college funds and things like that. And really, he just makes a lot of common sense. But I was able to see some tangible results very quickly with it. And I was able to go from, when I was working for somebody else, I was about $6,000 in debt after my divorce. I was able to basically go from that to, I think it was either $15,000 or $20,000 cash positive in the bank by the time I decided to quit my job. And I didn't do anything revolutionary. Sure, I had to say no to a few fun things in the beginning, but Dave has a saying. There's two sayings I always remember from him, which is live like nobody else today so later you can live like nobody else. And that's true, because the friends that I was on that debt journey with, they continued their way, and I didn't. I said, well, I don't like this. I'm going to go this other path. And at first, right, they were doing all these trips and taking all this fun stuff and spending all this money and having a great time. But what happened was, slowly, one car payment turned into two car payment that turned into a boat payment that turned into a brand new house payment that turned into this payment, that payment. They were broke. So they would get money, but the second they got money, they'd have to spend it all on expenses, whereas I had, you know, I was decreasing my bills. So at the beginning, it looked like they were having a great time. The problem was, over time, their debt increased, my debt reduced, and my discretionary income went up substantially. And now it's like, hey, I'm going to go do this. And what I hear from my friends now is the same thing I used to tell them a couple years ago. Oh, man, I wish I could do it. I just can't afford it.
Mm. Yeah, I interviewed another lady, and she'd also been following Dave Ramsey. And I think she said that one of the bits of advice he gave was that you pay off your smallest debt first.
He calls it his debt snowball. And basically what it
that's
is,
it.
Yeah, you take five bills, okay, and you say, okay, I owe, you know, $100, $500, $1,000, $2,000. You make the minimum payments on all of the bills, and then you take all the extra money and put it on that $500 or the lowest bill. And the whole reason is, and I can tell you this is true from experience, and not only just in debt but in goal setting, is if you can get that small victory really quick, and it's like, hey, that American Express bill, that's paid off, it's done. Hey, this, you know, this old Sprint bill, that's paid off and done. If this is done, if that's done, and you start getting success. You know, I always joke about this, but it's like, hey, if you want to go learn how to run, you know, and you had two choices, you either get on the treadmill and you walk for 20 minutes at a reasonable pace, or you've got to go do a marathon. Well, of course, you're going to pick the reasonable pace one, because you need to start slowly and you need to start seeing results. And I think people, what they try to do is they go, what's the biggest, tallest mountain I can climb immediately? And they go, okay, I'm going to shoot for that right now. And sadly, what happens is they get a little dirt kicked in their face and they go, oh, I give up. For instance, financially, when I talk to people about online, their whole thing to me is, hey, I want to make money. I want to make money. I want to make $10,000 a month. And my thing is, if you're getting started, don't shoot for $10,000. Shoot for $100. And then once you've got $100, then go, okay, I'm going to go to $5, and then $8, and then $1,000. Because as I look at my online income, it wasn't a straight shot up. You know, some months I'd make a few hundred, some months I'd make a few thousand, a few months, you know, I would make five figures. But I never set out with a, hey, I'm going to make $10,000. And what happens is, when you exceed your goals, you shoot higher, but when you and you feel better about yourself. But when you don't exceed your goals or you don't meet them, you feel worse about yourself. So set a small, realistic goal, achieve that, and then move the bar.
So it's really all about making personal decisions and spending wisely, isn't it, Robin? And blindly.
You know, as we're doing this interview, we just had a big election in the U.S. We just re-elected Barack Obama. And it is amazing to me, the political from both sides and how many people have such a vested interest in something that truly has no real impact on their life. And what I mean by that is, I'm a big believer in personal responsibility and a personal economy. And what I mean by personal economy is this, right? I don't care what's going on in the outside economy. I think right now, I think our unemployment rate is 8%. I don't care what our unemployment rate is right now, because my employment rate is 100%. You know, while people were struggling and people were financially hurting, okay, and I respect that and I understand that because I have definitely been there, right? I had the best 2 years of my business combined. I was able to pay off all my debt. I was actually able to buy my first house completely. I paid that off, and now we're in a second new home, which is a beautiful blessing. But if I had listened to other people, I was supposed to be struggling and down and out on my luck, when in reality, I was doing better than 99% of the people out there. And, I don't care who the president is. I don't care who my local mayor is. Do I know that information? Sure. Do I let it impact me in any way? Absolutely not, because I'm going to be responsible for my personal well-being. And if you read like guys like Brian Tracy, Zig Ziglar, Earl Nightingale, they tell you, you make a big shift in your life. And I'll admit, sometimes I'm not great at this. Sometimes I still have that victim mentality of like, oh, well, this should happen for me, and this should happen because of this and that. And the truth of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, no one is going to pull you up or push you down in your life without you letting them. And no one's going to love and take care of your business and yourself as much as you are. But that's why if you talk to a lot of business owners, there's a real disdain between them and their employees, because the business owner, this is like a child. They love it. They nurture it. They brought it into this world. And to employees, it's a job. It's a paycheck. It's, hey, this is what I do, to make money between the hours of 9 to 5. So take a personal responsibility. Realize nobody's going to be here to hurt you, and that you have to be your biggest fan and cheerleader going forward.
Oh, that's great advice. One of the quotes out of the book that you wrote, which is up on Amazon, says, "A rich life is more than money. It begins when you start managing your own money. It continues by helping other people to become rich as well," which is a really lovely quote. And that's what you do as well with your products, isn't it? Because you have strategies and tactics that actually work.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Zig Ziglar, I think, is famous for it. You know, if you want to get rich, help other people become rich. And as corny as it sounds, it really is true. You know what? I'm not great at this. But what you notice about people that are really successful is a couple of things. And I've really been studying this because I feel like I have a lot of growth left to do. But one thing is they're always grateful. They always have a sense of gratitude and thanks for the people that help them, for their situations, for their surroundings. One of the things I think that is best helped me do that is every morning I get up, I have just a little one-page time management checklist, and the second line is, what am I grateful for today? And, you know, if you wake up, here's a perfect example. The other day, my wife still has a 9-to-5 job. I don't know why she still does. I think she does it just to torture me. But she mistakenly set her alarm for 4 a.m. So, and that's not a time that is prevalent in the Castleman household. Usually I'm going to bed about 4 a.m. So the alarm goes off, right, and my lovely bride gets up and shuts it off. Well, now I'm wide awake. Well, she decides I'm going to go back to bed. Well, I can't sleep, right? So, of course, naturally, being the lovely, sane and level-headed guy, right, I'm upset about this. I'm like, I'm awake, you're asleep. This really stinks. Well, then she gets up, she turns the lights on, she starts blow-drying her hair with what only I could describe as a jet engine, because it was truly that loud. She had like spotlight. I don't know what happened, but honestly, it put me kind of in a bad mood. I was able to refocus once I did that one page time management sheet. And I think if you come from a position of gratitude in the day, like that's number one. And number two is value. Right. The third thing I figure out is, right, today I will create value by, and then I leave it blank. Okay, and I actually have, as part of my routine, every day I have to spend 30 minutes creating value. Now, that can be a blog post, it can be a video, it can be a software product, it could be working on a book, it could be working on a presentation. This interview here is creating value, hopefully, for the people that are listening. And I really think if you come at a point of gratitude, like I'm thankful for everything, and then how can I continue to increase value to others, once you increase your value to other people will greatly appreciate that, and they'll be drawn to you. And I'm not trying to get woo-woo and, you know, your mind's eye and stuff like that. But I truly, if you've noticed people that are happy and successful, that's what I've noticed about them. They're always striving to provide value, and they're always living in a sense of gratitude towards somebody else.
an attitude of gratitude. That's wonderful. So the process you work with is that you learn something, you do it yourself, and then you teach it, don't you?
Absolutely. And see, that's the thing. You know, so many people, they look and they go, oh, what you do, Tim, is so hard. And it really isn't. You know, I probably shouldn't say that. I probably should say it's incredibly tough and I should be paid more for what I do. And, you know, if anyone wants to send me more money, I'm fine with that. But the fact of the matter is, what I do and what other people do, I don't think is a big deal, but other people seem to believe it is. And here's what I mean by that. So many people, and I get it, okay, so many people are afraid of failure, right? Because we make it out to be this big, huge thing. Because we make it in our mind to be like, man, if I were to try to learn how to speed read and I couldn't accomplish that, what a life tragedy that would be. And I talk about this often because dating to me really has taught me just as much about marketing and sales as anything. And I remember being divorced. I had married, like I said earlier, my high school sweetheart. So I married practically the first woman that I seriously dated. So here I am. I think at the time I was 24, 25. I was divorced. I was grossly overweight. You know, I was making a whopping $32,000 a year. I was driving a Chevy Cavalier, which for those of you not in the States, that's like an economy subcompact car. You know, I lived in a neighborhood where my house had been attempted to be broken into three times that year. So I didn't really have a lot to offer. So I started freaking out, like, man, if I try to go and approach a girl and basically show her this dynamic, wonderful package known as Tim Castleman, she's going to reject me. But it wasn't just that she was going to reject me. I imagined her throwing drinks in my face, maybe slapping me, maybe doing all these horrible things. Maybe her and her girlfriends laughing at me and stuff like that. And I remember being paralyzed by that fear for a long time. And I think a lot of people, sadly, are paralyzed by that fear because and that's where they get. But, you know, one day I just said, okay, shut up, Blaine. Stop. I'm going to go try. I'm going to find the first attractive girl that I see, and I'm going to go ask her out for a date. If she says yes, great. If she says no, that's fine too. So I went up to this very young lady at a gas station of all places, the worst place ever, by the way, to try to pick up women. Like, hey, I noticed you're pumping gas. Do you want to go out for a coffee? It was horrible. But I asked her out, right? I followed through with my intuition, and she said, oh, you know what? Thank you so much. I'm flattered, but I have a boyfriend. But thank you so much. And I stopped, and I was like, wow, is that it? I mean, she didn't slap me. She didn't throw gas on me and try to light me on fire. She didn't spray my face with mace. And that's when I discovered, and ladies, I don't mean to offend you because of this next statement, but it's just what I've discovered is that ladies and women are, I guess, girls, whatever. Now we'll just offend all of them, right? Are trained to be really polite to people even when they're saying no. Like my wife, God love her, but we'll be at a restaurant and it'll take like 2 hours to get something and I'm fuming. I'm mad. I want to like start breaking stuff. She's like, oh, sweetie, you know, it's just maybe the cook's having a bad day. Right? They're very understanding. And once I understood that the worst they were going to say is no, and 95% of the time they were going to do it in a loving, kind, gentle way as to really go out of my way to not hurt my feelings, I was addicted. And I went from no dates to about 3 or 4 dates a week just understanding that power. So I tell you that big, long, complicated story to basically give you this synopsis. The fear in your head of what's really going to happen never, ever does. You always think it's going to be this big, huge thing. The world's going to open up and swallow you whole. And truthfully, right, most of the time, 95% of the time, it's just a simple no. And if it's not a simple no, you know what? Some people in life are jerks. You just move on.
That's what I really like about you, the way that you convey your messages through stories. That's absolutely brilliant. So did you buy the Double Your Dating book, Eben Pagan's one?
I did not. I think a buddy of mine gave me one of his CD sets, and I listened to that driving back and forth to work for probably a solid month. And I was really impressed with Eben's attitude. And what I remember from that was the whole what's the worst. But the other thing that he really taught me was I call it the ideal self-image. And basically it's we all have this picture in our mind of who we really want to be. So I remember I remember this vividly, like closing my eyes and picturing myself with jet black hair, tan skin, skinny, wearing a nice outfit, fancy shoes, driving a nice vehicle, well, a nice watch. I think I had some rings on, right? And it's funny, I look at myself, I don't even own a watch. I have no jewelry on. I don't even wear a wedding ring. But I remember having that self-image, but that gave me something to really strive for. So Evan was definitely helpful in that area. A lot of his stuff I didn't really agree with. And that's the other thing. It's like people take so much stuff at face value and they never try something on their own. It's like if I tell you to go out and take 5 steps left and 5 steps right and you're going to be home and you're like, no, I'm not. Well, then what happens if you take a 6th step or a 7th step? So what I would tell you is take people's advice, try it out how they teach it first. And if that doesn't work, then modify it to your own situation. And really just, you know, stop and ask yourself, you know, what is the worst that's going to happen? I mean, and if you start asking that question and you really write it down, you realize it's like, man, nothing is terrible. I mean, you know, I live an amazing life and I'm extremely blessed for the life that I have now. But what's the worst that could happen to me? Well, if this whole business goes bankrupt and I suddenly lose my ability to produce a single email or sales letter, the worst that could happen is I have to go work for somebody else. And yeah, that'd probably suck and not be ideal, but it's not like they're going to just, you know, put me out the pasture one day. I still have a lot of life in front of me and a lot of years of creating value and helping others in front of me. So I think if you really look at that, you realize those big mountains you think are really little molehills that you've just built up over time.
That's right. If it doesn't kill you, that's all okay, isn't it?
Yeah, well, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger, exactly.
Something like that, yeah. So I was referring to your stories, which I really enjoy. Another person who does great stories is Frank Kern, who you obviously admire as well. I'm not the only one who thinks that you're a bit like Frank Kern, because I received this email the other day, and you're probably aware of it. I'm not really sure. It's about your product, Money Made Easy, and somebody was promoting it. And I quote here, "Every time I promote Tim and Tanner, I get at least one person that comes back and says, that Tim Castleman can be a real jerk. And it makes me snicker a little because Tim is one of the most caring guys I've ever met. He cares more about the success of his customers than just about anyone I know. But he can be quite abrasive. He curses on his webinars, makes vulgar jokes, and at some point will say something that will offend you. Kind of like Kern, but funnier. But if you get past his tough outer core, you'll find a squishy, fluffy bear that just wants to help people succeed."
I'm going to kill Don Wilson. That's who wrote that. Yeah, when I see Don again, and it will be in a few months, I'm going to physically assault him.
How did you know that was him?
My assistant was like, "Hey, Don wrote an email about you." And I was like, "Well, let me see it." And I saw it, and I just laughed. And let's kind of break down that email, because I'll be honest with you, I struggle with that a lot. That's probably one of my biggest struggles. In fact, today I was helping Noah Kagan from AppSumo, and by helping, I was just kind of reviewing a product. And he said, "Hey, Tim, I really want to know your opinion." I forget his exact words, but basically he said, "You're extremely critical and harsh." And I thought, well, that's kind of an asshole thing to say, you know, because I don't see it like that. Let me tell you a few things I think people should know. One, I don't have a high tolerance for BS or fluff or theory. I really don't. Two, I have no business in the customer service business. Now, let me explain that. I don't mind doing webinars. I don't mind sales presentations, writing products. I love all that. Writing emails to my list, I absolutely love all of that. What I don't like is having to deal with negativity and dealing with customers that want refunds and stuff like that. That, because to me, and I still work on this, and I basically outsource it to my assistant, and she doesn't even have I don't even have access to the account that she does to see all the emails. But like when someone says, "Hey, I don't want this product anymore," I take that as a personal affront. Like they don't want me. Like it's rejection. And I'm sure it has roots in my childhood, but I have always – one thing I've noticed about any relationship is like when somebody rejects me or pulls away, my immediate response is, well, how can I pull away farther? So I'm guilty as charged for that. I also do make rude jokes and inappropriate jokes because I am an entertainer at heart. I mean, you can't be 4'2" and going through middle school and not make the bullies laugh before they beat the crap out of you. So a lot of that has my childhood, and a lot of that I'm sure is coping mechanisms for some of the wonderful things that transpired earlier in life. But the thing that Don mentioned, I'm glad he did, is, you know, I really care about my customers. You see, this marketing thing, a lot of people, I know a lot of guys don't have issues, right? They send 5 emails a day. They promote anything underneath the sun. What's going to make me the most money? Get it. And I don't. Like, I want to look. I want to find products that are good, products that are relevant, products that are really going to help, products that the product creator actually did. I go through the products. I have my assistant go through the products. I try to find stuff like, oh, they're lacking in this, so let me do that. So I really feel like I try to keep my customers' interest best at heart, but I understand that to people, they see a different person. They see kind of a gruff and not a short-tempered, but just a short-fused type of person. And trust me, I can get spun in to anger like nobody's business, but I really don't feel like that's who I am at my core being. But I guess I have to work on improving that, because I think other people see that. And like Don says, I think most people on the outside, but once you get into my inner circle, and it's not that hard, just be cool and let's hang out and let's get to know each other, you really see someone that I like to think really cares about their success. Nothing makes me happier than to get an email from somebody that says, hey, Tim, I quit my job. Hey, Tim, I made my first dollar online or offline. That's the stuff that we live for. You see, this whole guru thing, it sounds awesome and wonderful, and it can be, and it does have lots of perks, okay? I'm not griping about that. But it can also be very lonely and depressing, and you really start to question yourself a lot, like, am I really making a difference in the world? Am I really helping people with this product? And my thing is, I've got to be able to do that for me to feel complete, and I like getting that feedback and validations from others letting me know that it's working.
Yeah, with success comes responsibility, doesn't it? Because people do tend to follow what you say and things, so you have to lead them in the right direction. And your success has been quite considerable, both online and offline. And although you claim to be lazy, you're actually a very prolific product creator, an author, and a local offline consultant, so you can't really be that lazy.
I've got to stop using my friend Brian Johnson yells at me every time I say it. He's like, you're not lazy. And I'm not lazy. I just feel lazy compared to, like, my dad. You know, like, my dad spent 20 years in the military, and he hated that job. Every day he hated that job. He'd tell, oh, what are you doing? I'm going off to work. I hate this job. But he stuck through it. You know, he went on deployments. He got up at 4:45 every morning, worked late, you know, work weekends. My wife, you know, she travels every other week out to California for her job. When she's here, last night I think she went to bed at 11 o'clock, she was working up until then. So when I see the 9-to-5ers work, I'm lazy when it comes to putting in the hours. Here's where the critical change is, and if people get this, you can change your whole business and your whole life. I went from making $40,000 a year at my height with the insurance company, and I think I was working 40 hours plus a 2-hour daily commute, so we'll just call it 50 hours, working through lunch, stressed out, fat, overweight. Well, I was able to duplicate that income working 4 hours a week, sometimes less, right, my first year online. Now, two disclaimers, okay? One, I did not use the 4-hour work week to do that. I didn't even know that book. That book hadn't even existed yet, but I was amazed at how little I could work and how much money I could create from that time. And here's what the difference is, and here's what you need to understand. You need to understand, where is your value to the world? Meaning, look, you may get paid. At that time, I think I was making $20 an hour at my job, which is pretty darn good. But I got paid per hour. Well, I was salary, but still, you get it, right? So 9 to 10, give me $20. 10 to 11, $20. 11 to 12, $20. Well, now as a product creator, as an author, as a speaker, I can do something once, and I can get paid on that forever. I'm still getting product paid on products that I created 2, 3, 4 years ago because of the fact that I was able to leverage my skills, talents, and abilities to get something paid over and over. So that's tip one. Tip two is this. You got to understand what you're not good at. I've referenced customer service. I'm not good at that. My assistant is amazing at it, right? I pay her amazingly well because she's amazingly good at what she does. So if you're like, man, I just can't get this technical stuff, hire that stuff out. To me, it's much more important to do that and really focus on the stuff that's going to make you the most amount of money in your life and really eliminate the stuff that you hate. Let me give you two other quick examples because I get a lot of crap about this. And I want to be clear. I'm not an elitist, okay? I drive a Toyota Tundra. I'm not like Frank Kern. I don't have millions in the bank. If I stop working tomorrow, I'd be broke probably within a year to two, okay? So, but I do have a lady that comes and helps clean my house 3 times a week. And by helps, I mean does it. And people go, oh, that's so snobby. I can't believe I'm a maid. Well, first of all, she's like $10 an hour, and I found her on Craigslist. But two, if I had to do that stuff, right, I'm taking away from high-value activity time to, you know, clean the restroom, to wash dishes, to fold laundry, to do stuff like that. And my thing is this. If you set a value on your time, anything below that value for that time, you should outsource. And anything you don't like doing, you need to outsource as much as humanly possible. So I don't like cleaning up after myself. I don't mind, like, you know, putting dirty laundry in the laundry mat, something like that. But I don't get fulfilled by doing dishes or any of that domestic stuff. And frankly, neither does my wife. She doesn't mind cooking, but, you know, the day-to-day cleaning stuff, we just don't. So we thought it'd be a better investment and a better long-term strategy to let someone else do that so that I can take those 2, 3, 4, 5 hours she's here a week cleaning and invest it in putting out a product and answering emails and writing a blog post and doing interviews, things of that nature. So don't feel guilty taking care of yourself and saying, hey, I know who I am. There's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I know who I am as a person, and I'm not going to like that. I'm not going to enjoy that. I don't want to do that. So here's what I'm going to do instead.
Now, I think that a lot of people do that. I was listening to somebody the other day who lives a very healthy lifestyle, and they have people come in to make their juices in the morning and prepare their salads and things just because it's a better use of their time to do what they can earn more money at, basically, what they're more skilled with.
I've got a lot of friends that do juicing, and I've thought about it, but every time I think juicing, I go, I got to go buy all the stuff, then I got to do it, then I got to clean it, clean all up, then I got to get the little juice containers, remember to clean those out, and I got to do that on a daily basis? Like, no way. You know, like one of the things my assistant locally does here is she prepares these little egg cups, and I don't know the recipe. It just looks like scrambled eggs and little sausage bites and stuff like that. But she does that every Monday so that I have breakfast for the week. So when I wake up, my new routine as of 2 weeks ago is I get up, I go to the gym, I go do the treadmill for 30 minutes, I go sit in the sauna for 30 minutes, I come home, take a shower, I eat those egg cups, and I plan out the day. Now, if she didn't do that, a lot of times I'd skip breakfast, which is really bad for you. I'd eat something super unhealthy, which is even worse. So to me, it made better sense to do that. So, you know, if you see people doing that, the first inclination is like, oh, that's kind of snobby or rude. But really, it's all about taking care of yourself and making sure that you're at your optimal health and fitness levels for the day and what the day is going to bring you.
Absolutely. If you don't look after yourself, you can't really do anything else, can you? You haven't got a business if you haven't got your health, have you?
Yeah, and I agree with that. You know, and I remember, I don't remember if I saw this online or where, but someone had a photo of this car, and this car was just absolutely covered in bird poop. I mean, it was, if there were less than 1,000 bird poop droppings on this thing, I'd have been shocked. And he goes, I can't believe that someone let their self-image be beat up like this. Why not spend the $6 to go get the car washed? You know, and if you don't have $6, like, wash it off yourself. And it really struck a nerve with me because, you know, I at my lowest weight, I was probably 170. And I'm right now about 200 pounds, which is 15 pounds down from 215. And what really prompted the change for me was I thought, do I not love myself enough to take care of myself physically? Like, I don't mind, going and having a drink and a smoke and, and eating bad food now and then. But it's like, do I hate myself enough not to even do basic maintenance and try and eat good and healthy? And even though I've only been doing this for the last 6 weeks, as far as change of diet and exercise and things like that, I notice a real difference in my attitude and my confidence level and just my overall well-being. And as I see it, I hate exercise. Let me be clear. Like, I don't run. I walk on the treadmill. If you ever see me running from an event, someone's chasing me because I'm not doing it willingly. But I just said, you know what? It may not be like what an Olympic runner or an athlete does, but it's better than I did before, and it's better than 85% of the people out there are doing now.
Do you not do martial arts then?
I do that in the evening, and that's a great workout. I do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. When I'm not traveling, I try to get there about 3 to 4 times a week. In fact, in a few hours, I've got a class that I'm already dreading because I'm the old guy in the class. You know, imagine showing up to a training center, and you got all these young, ripped 20-year-olds who are all trying to do ultimate fighting, and they're trying to knock you out and beat you up. And I'm like, okay, just please don't punch me in the face. I have to shoot a video tomorrow. So it's a great workout, and it also I don't want to say it humbles you because I guess maybe I'm not to that point, but it really does teach you respect. It's like there's a whole nother level. And my coach taught me very early on, like, if you ever are out somewhere and you have some guy that's being loud and boisterous and basically talking a lot of smack and, hey, I'm going to beat you up in this, that guy can't fight. It's the guy that's quiet and is just waiting for you to make a move. That's the guy you have to be afraid of. So I do the martial arts. I'm doing the treadmill and the sauna in the morning. I'm eating a little healthier because I just want to take care of myself and I want to have a better image. You know, when I look in the mirror, I want to be proud of what I see and not be like, oh man, I can't believe, you know, I'm fat or, you know, I don't like this or I don't like that.
I think a lot of people that work online, though, they do tend to get out of shape, don't they? Because they spend a lot of time sitting at the computer and it's not really a healthy lifestyle, is it really?
You know, at the beginning, kind of get addicted to it, right? So as we're doing this interview, we've sent out a promotion, and every few minutes my Gmail reboots, and it tells me I've got some new sales. And I remember when I first got started, that was so addicting that I would send out an email, and it'd shoot up, and I'd stay there until the sales dropped off, and I'd go, okay, once I get like 5 more, I'm going to bed. And you just start spending all your time, and you focus all your time and energy on one thing, and you forget to kind of have a life. And a few months ago, I stopped and I said, hey, you know, what do you want to do for fun? And I legitimately couldn't come up with an answer. I couldn't tell you, man, I'd really like to do this for fun, or I can't wait to do that for fun. I had been so involved in my business, you know, and I'd let personal relationships lapse, and, you know, I'd let my health lapse, and I just said, man, I can't even think about something, you know, I don't have to do anything today, but what is it that I want to do? And I really couldn't come up with that. So that was a big alarm for me that, hey, I need to do a better job of balancing. And you know, this business is great, and it's awesome, but the whole point of it is you're supposed to have this freedom and live life on your terms. So now I've got like a strict cutoff time that I get offline. I try to decompress. Tomorrow, I actually probably won't be in line at all because I also feel like the more you're plugged in and connected, just like your phone battery, just like your iPad battery, your laptop battery, you drain over time and you need to get away from the computer. You need to get out. You need to experience life, and that recharges you.
But at least you're lucky because you're making sales. There are a lot of people online that just are buying all the time, aren't they? And they're not actually earning anything.
Yeah, you know, and it's frustrating. And again, guys, I have been there. I don't think I mentioned this before, but one of the things that that I bought, and this was on eBay, was, I don't know how I came across it. So do a search, and I'm sure it's out there. But I found an old digital copy of the Gary Halbert letters, and they were all 20 years of Gary's work. And I think I paid like a whopping $15. So the guy mails me the disc. I go to work promptly on Monday. I go in an hour early before the boss shows up, and I print them all out. And it's about 1,200 pages, 3 full binders full. And every night I sat there from when I got down at like 6 o'clock, I sat there and I said, okay, I'm going to read this letter. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do X. I'm going to do Y. And I did that for months on end. And I remember, dating my girlfriend and was like, hey, you know, I got this idea. Oh, that's great, baby. Oh, I got this idea. I got that. And then finally one day she said, hey, are you going to do anything with this stuff that you're learning, or are you just in a perpetual state of learning? You know, she didn't use a fancy word of like perpetual, but she was like, are you going to actually do anything with this? And what I found happened was those letters were a blessing and a curse. And I think most products out there are a blessing and a curse. And what I mean by that is this. If you go out and you get knowledge, and then you're like, that's great. Let me learn something else. Let me learn something else. Let me learn something else. And we always are waiting for that last little thing to complete us. And I'm guilty of it, too. I still buy products on a regular basis, and then I kick myself. I'm like, I'll get through it, and I'll go, I already knew that, right? Or, oh, I know that. And we keep looking for this secret button, this magic formula, or this magic pill, and it's not out there. So what I started doing was I started saying, okay, this one idea, I just read it. Really inspired me. I'm really excited about it. I'm going to go do it. Okay, that worked? Didn't work. Okay, it worked. What's the next idea? That one didn't work. What's the next one? The next one. And when I stopped trying to know everything and I just said, I'm going to take one little step and then another little step and then one little step and another little step, and you start making those baby steps, then you start making real progress in your business.
I think another problem as well with a lot of the products that are available these days, there are so many videos and so many reports and things that you just can never get through them, can you? Whereas your products tend to be quite simplistic. They follow a logical route.
Yeah, that's true. You know, Dan Kennedy, who's probably one of my biggest mentors, and I owe so much to Dan, and I hope to meet him one day and tell him, add my list to the long name of Kennedy lovers. But one of my biggest problem with Dan is his products are forever. One of the best products I think I ever bought from him was the advanced coaching and consulting thing. And that was a real eye-opener for me. The problem was it was a three-day live event that he just recorded as is. So anytime I want to go back and watch those DVDs, I literally had to carve out 3 days of my life. Or I could have looked through like the 1,700 pages of transcripts. So I don't like that. And there's two reasons I do my products the way they are. Actually, probably three. The first one is that's how I learn. I am like in jiu-jitsu class, right? They have to break everything down for me. It's like, oh, you do this the one move and you do this and you throw the guy in the back and you grab his arm and you do that. I'm like, okay, stop. What is step one? Step one is you grab them. Okay, what's step two? You flip them. Okay, so I learn like that. So I know if I learn like that, other people learn like that. And the other thing, the other reason I do it like that is I want people to really feel like it's quick, it's easy, and they can get through it and they can be done with it quickly and start implementing it. Because tomorrow, if we keep waiting for tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, tomorrow's never going to come. But if you get a product and you're like, hey, it took me 20 minutes to get through or an hour to get through, I like it, I know exactly what I'm going to do, and I can start posting and get results, that to me is the world. Instead of I've got to wait 5 days, go through all this stuff, you know, take this test, fill out this quiz, answer these 19 pages of questions. No. Get in, get out. So I want people to be able to get started as quick as possible. And the last thing is I want you to have a sense of accomplishment when it comes to completing a product. You see, when you buy a book, Tim Ferriss is getting ready to release a new book here. I'm going to buy it. I will never read all the way through it, but I'm going to buy it, just like I bought his other two books. And I'll pick and choose some chapters and I'll read them. But what's going to happen is every time I walk by the bookshelf, I'm going to look at that book and I'm going to, in my mind, think, man, this is unfinished business. This is unfinished work. And probably get to the point where I start resenting that a little bit and resenting myself instead of something that goes, man, I got all the way through it, I understood it, and I'm ready to go.
So you tend to, your products, you tend to start with an idea, don't you? And then you, what is your process? You ask why, what, how, and what if, isn't it? Isn't that how it works?
Here's how, and if you're ever stuck, this has gotten me out of so much. And I don't know who the originator is. I think it might be Eben. Jason Flatlin, I know, has this in a product. I'll just give them both credit for initially teaching me the foundation, and I'll give myself a little credit for expanding it. But what I try to do is I try to break everything down, every product, into four categories. So why, what, how, and what if. So let's go through all those. So the first one is why. And basically, why the heck should I care about learning this? So I'm getting ready to release at the end of this month a product called Easy Offline Video. And it's basically about clients or you shooting a review video of a client's website and sending it to them through YouTube. The great thing about it is the fact that they can stay home. They don't have to meet the client face-to-face. They only shoot the videos to interested parties. And it doesn't cost anything, or it's very, very cheap in order to do that. So I would list why. Why would you want to do this? Well, you can stay home. It's cheap. You can email people. Only people that are interested respond, right? So that's that. And then the what is the step-by-step. So what process do I have to take from Tim Castleman, newbie, doesn't have a clue, to Tim Castleman recorded a video and then uploaded it to YouTube, sent an email, consults with a client, makes a sale, does the outsourcing. And then the how is basically taking each step of the what. So let's say step one is, okay, I have to find local businesses. So that's the what, number one. The how is, here's how I find them. I go to Google. I go to Yellow Pages. I type in attorneys, Lubbock, Texas. I review all the websites. I find a bad website. So step two is, I've got to shoot a video. Okay, how do I do that? Well, you need one of these four pieces of free software. Once you do that, here's what you say. Here's a script to go from there. Okay, so you've got the why, you've got the what, now you've got the how and the how, excuse me, and then you have what if. And the what if is simply, what if everything goes right, and then what if everything goes wrong. So here's what happens: if they don't respond, you do this. If they do respond, you do that.
That sounds like a brilliant product. I no doubt I'll be buying that. It sounds like you've been following W.J. Cameron, who said once, money never starts an idea. It's the idea that starts the money.
To kind of tell you the truth of that, let me tell you about the last product I released, which was Easy Offline Formula. And basically, this is an extremely revolutionary patented process, so I hope nobody steals it. But basically, I bought some private label rights, developer rights, PLR, or developer rights, WordPress themes, excuse me. I posted an ad on Craigslist, and I said, hey, if you want me to make you a cheap one-page website, I'll do that for $295, I believe, was what I was charging. So I actually was able to land a client to doing it. Long story short, I actually gave away that ad as a bonus to an affiliate offer. I forgot I placed the ad online, and I started getting calls for it. So I had to fulfill the service for one customer. So I made, I think, a whopping $380. I don't even think I ever cashed that guy's check. So if you got a website for free, congratulations. Well, then I was able to take and make a product based on that process, and I probably got paid before affiliate commissions 10 times to 100 times what I got paid from that single client. So you don't, and that's the other thing I tell people, is you don't have to do tremendous, huge, life-changing things. If you've lost 20 pounds, people want to know how to do that. If you have a good relationship, people want to know how to do that. If you're able to do X or Y or Z, there are a lot of things that people would pay for, especially small amounts like $10, $15, $20, to learn a simple technique or a trick or a helpful tip that would help me kind of progress, either to get skinnier, to have more free time, to better manage my money, to improve my health and well-being, relationships, whatever. So understand, keep that format in mind. Understand it doesn't have to be a huge process to beginning with. And as long as you have a single chance of success or a single proof element, even if that proof element is yourself, that's enough to get the ball going.
Well, that's right, because you're not special in any way. I don't mean that in derogatory terms, but I mean everybody is special and they've got their own talents. And it's not about intelligence or money or education, is it? It's self-belief and giving back, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and the thing is, the funny thing to me is people just, they know it, they understand it, but they don't take the action. And it goes back to that whole fear thing. And here's my deal, right? What's the worst that's going to happen to you? If you spend 15, 20 hours on a product and it doesn't sell, well, okay, you can catch up on your crappy programming at a later time. You can catch up on all the shows that you missed. But what happens if you make a few dollars on it? What happens if you make a lot of money? I mean, look at your situation now and really think about it. I mean, do you really want to continue to live that life the rest of your life? If you do, that's great. I'm very happy for you, and I really do wish the best for you. But if you're like a lot of people where you're not happy, and it's not even that you're not happy, it's just you want a little more money or you need some change or anything like that, why not put yourself out there and help people out? And the greatest reward isn't the money that I make, although that's a nice benefit. It's the fact that I actually get to help people. You know, mentioning the easy offline formula, the great thing about that is I had a guy, and he came to me, and he's a quadriplegic. For those of you who don't know, he has no use of his arms and his legs, and he's confined to a wheelchair, which I believe he has to steer with his nose. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure he does. Well, he was able to buy that product and get not one, but two offline clients as a result of that. So think about that, right? Here's a guy who can't walk, who can't use his arms, limited mobility, but he was able to achieve success. So what would happen to that guy if I had put that product out? Maybe he wouldn't have been successful. Maybe he wouldn't have been able to have that extra money to help out his family with all the medical bills and things like that. So don't just think about, well, you know, what is take out of me? What is the disservice that you're doing to other people? You know, a lot of people have questions about Tim Ferriss and his background and some of the claims he makes, but I know a lot of people are doing the slow carb diet that he wrote about in the 4-Hour Body and getting a lot of good, positive, healthy results. So he's probably, with that one book, impacted thousands, if not tens of thousands of people's lives in a permanent way. Well, what if he just decided, you know what, I'm not going to write that book? Well, then he took away that joy and that increased life or that better life from all those people.
That's an amazing story. But there's so many people offline particularly that need help, don't they? So your product is not only probably going to help the people that purchase it and implement it, but obviously the people that are on the receiving end.
Yeah, and you know, you just never know. I mean, it's crazy where the success stories and the testimonials come from, and you're just like blown away by it. And when you start to realize, I did a survey to my list months ago, and I basically said, hey, if you earned an extra $1,000 a year, or excuse me, a month, what would that mean to you? And you would be amazed at the percent of people that just that extra $1,000 a month would have a tremendous to life-changing impact on them. So that's the other thing, is it doesn't have to be this huge, here's how to make $50 million overnight. It can be more of a, hey, here's how to do this one thing and consistently make a few hundred dollars a month. And people will love that and respect that and appreciate that. And they do that for two reasons. One is that they see it in their mind and they see that that's believable. A lot of people, and myself included again, because I always like to tell people, right, I don't come from this I'm perfect thing. I'm a flawed individual. And I really, if I really thought about it, I never thought I'd ever make six figures in my life. I never thought growing up like, oh, I always thought, oh, I want to be rich, but I never thought like six figures. Like, oh, man, that's a lot of money or anything. So if someone had told me at the beginning, Tim, you're going to make six figures a year, I would probably tell them they were full of it. In fact, I remember having a conversation with a good friend of mine, and I was like, dude, are you serious? Come on. You know, don't lie to me. Tell me the truth. Can you really make six figures online? And he's like, yeah, I've done it for multiple years. And at that time, even though I had my friend's confirmation, swear word coming up, so cover your ears, right, I thought, bullshit. I was like, this guy's lying to me. There's no way you could do that, until I did it. And then I was like, wow, you really can do that. And then I was able to do it again, and I was like, wow, it's actually something that if you do the right things in your business, it's going to be totally sustainable. So that's kind of what I would tell you to do is, you know, just look at yourself, see how you can impact people, how can you provide value, and how can you come from a place of, you know, the other thing we haven't really touched on, but I think it's critical, is building relationships in this business. You know, all our life is centered around relationships with our spouse, our loved ones, our family, coworkers, bosses, employers. But on the online space, it's even more so. And what I would tell you is go out there and genuinely try to make friends with people. Don't just be like, oh, he's my affiliate and I'm only going to contact him when I need something from him. Because we know, like, there's certain people I get emails from and I'm like, oh, they must have a product coming out. Because that's the only time I ever hear from them. That's the wrong way to do it, in my opinion. My way of doing it is, this person's a great friend of mine. I want to help them no matter what, whether good times, bad times. I want to help them out first and foremost because they're my friend, more than, oh, they're just an affiliate and I want to make money off of them.
That's a fantastic way to live. But some people, they're afraid of failure. But equally, there's other people that are frightened of success, isn't it? Because they're frightened that they will change and their relationships with their family might change, and that's why a lot of people never go forward.
Well, let me address that, because here's the truth. You are going to change. You absolutely are. I am not the same person that I was 3 years ago, and I am so freaking grateful for that. I have grown more in the last 3 years than I probably did on my first 30 years on this earth. And the other thing is this, the friends that I have now are totally different than the friends I had when I was working. And that's not a bad thing. People think that's a bad thing. Here's the thing. We surround ourselves with people that are like us, okay? And when you work for yourself and you can do whatever you want, when you want, how you want it, it's hard to maintain those 9-to-5 friendships. Because when you want to go golf at 1:30 on a Thursday, right? You call your buddy up. He's like, oh, man, I can't get off. I got to work, right? Or you make a lot of money. Other people are going to look at you differently. It's okay. I will say the relationships that I have now are at a higher quality and a higher level personally, not even the financial aspects and stuff like that, because I'm surrounding myself with successful, smart people. I'm in a mastermind. We just had a great call the other day, and I truly believe that I'm one of the – I don't want to say the dumbest person, but I truly feel like I have a lot to learn from those people in there. And those are the people that I want to be at. I don't want to be with somebody that's content making $30,000 a year, because what happens is you either go up or you go down with your surroundings. And if you surround yourself with people that, you know, work at Pizza Hut, don't want to advance themselves, don't want to improve their lives anyway, have terrible marriages, have bad diets, I mean, why do you think fat people hang out with fat people? Because they're similar, right? You don't see a fat person hanging out with a bunch of fit people and going, hey, you want to go to a buffet and totally destroy it? No, because like surrounds like. So I would tell you, yes, it's going to happen, but if you do it right and you're not a snob and a jerk about it and rub it in people's faces, your relationship will be much better. And the other thing is, you're going to find out who your true friends are. When I left the company, I left it very suddenly. I mean, it was literally like I think it was a Thursday night I quit, and so people came in on Friday. I left personal notes for 6 people in that office before I left, thanking them for their friendship, telling them, you know, goodbye, and then I couldn't wait to hear from them. I never heard from a single one of them. And I was crushed. I was depressed. I was devastated. I thought with some of these people, we were blood brothers. But what it taught me was that we didn't have a real meaningful relationship. You know, the guy that was my best man at my wedding, we still talk all the time, because even though we're not brothers, we really are like brothers. And because we have that meaningful relationship, even though he still works a day job and I have my own business, we're still friends. So the true friendships rise up, the superfluous, crappy ones fade away, and frankly, you shouldn't want it any different in your life.
They say you're the result of the 5 people you most surround yourself with, don't they?
Yeah, that's a big thing. I've never consciously – I've thought about consciously doing it, and I'm like, I don't know. But, you know, I'm always out there trying to meet new people, and I always gravitate towards people. Just the other day – this will be a funny story. So I'm in the sauna sitting there listening to some music, praying for my little timer to go off, because 30 minutes at 200 degrees, I'm fairly cooked. And this guy walks in with the Brian Tracy book. Now, I don't know this guy from Adam, and I'm like, that's Brian Tracy's Focal Point book. And for the next 30 minutes, we have this conversation, and it turns out he's a local business owner, and wouldn't you know, this guy's probably going to become a client of mine. But what started that conversation? Our mutual joy and enjoyment of Brian Tracy. And he told me how he just got back from a Tony Robbins event and so on and so forth. So, you know, had I not looked at that and tried to gravitate towards him, I probably would miss out on probably someone that's going to be a really good friend, a really good influence in my life, and somebody that has potential to be an employee. to employ me for services.
That's great. It's just as well you've got a good woman behind you. Well, actually, you've got two good women behind you, haven't you, to complement your work. Obviously, your wife, your princess, and Paula. At what point did you realize you couldn't progress alone and that you really needed somebody to do the things that maybe you didn't want to do or didn't like to do?
No, they teach in internet marketing, like, you should outsource immediately and you should try different programmers and different assistants and you should go overseas and hire somebody for $2 an hour and you should do X and Y. And so I did that, right? I drank the Kool-Aid and I hired a little cluck over in India or Philippines, and I was paying them dirt cheap, like $3 an hour. And, you know, shocking. To my surprise, it didn't go that well because they could barely understand English. They couldn't speak it. They couldn't do this or that. So then I switched over to a U.S. assistant. I had a U.S. assistant, and she was okay. She wasn't great, but she was okay. The issue with her was it wasn't that she was competent. The issue was her life was in shambles. And one of the things I can't stand is drama. Now, we all have bad days. I totally get that. Okay, but, you know, Gene, if you were to come to me and say, hey, look, Tim, here's the deal, right? I've got a husband, a boyfriend, whatever, and he beats me. And I'd say, okay, Gene, what I think you should do is get out of that relationship. And then you come back next week and you got more black guys. You're like, he's still beating me. I'm like, did you go? Did you leave? No. Okay, and then you come back the third week, you're like, he's still hitting me. It's like, at that point, I'm done because I've tried to help you, but obviously you're addicted to that drama. So that did not work really well. And truthfully, I was done. I was like, okay, no more partners. I'll just hire some outsourcers when I need them. Assistants. And then a good friend of mine, he hit me and said, hey, do you need an assistant? I said, well, I don't really know. He said, well, I can't keep this lady employed enough, and I think she does a great job, and maybe you'd like to talk to her. So I friended Paula on Skype, and I said, hey, send me your resume. So she did, and I never, ever looked at it because I got busy, my ADD, I'm sure, something to have to do with Facebook or something like that, and I just totally forgot, to be honest. And a few days later, she said, hey, are you still interested? And I was like, oh, crap. So I looked at her resume. I said, yeah, let's talk. And we talked, and I was like, yeah, let's give it a trial. You know, we'll do a couple hours a week and see what happens. And we agreed to the price, which is more than I've ever paid anybody per hour. But I was like, well, you got to invest in good people, and you got to do that stuff. So a few days later, she hit me up on Skype because she needed something, and I was out. And I came back, and it said, you know, hey, do you have the login for this? So I wrote her. I said, Paul, I'm sorry I was out. What can I help you with? And she said, oh, don't worry. I found the information, and I got it. Enjoy the rest of your day. And right then and there, I knew I had my person. As weird as that sounds, I was like, okay, this is the one. And let me explain that to you because I know that may not make sense. I heard an interview one time with Noah from AppSumo, and I always remember this. And he says that he classifies people into three types. So you have your negative ones, you have your zeros, and you have your plus ones. So let's go through those. The negative ones are people that detract from your business. They're always in a bad mood. They're drama. Maybe they're stealing from you. Maybe they're taking your customers. They're, you know, running off potential JV partners, stuff like that. So those people you want to fire and get rid of immediately. I would say that my previous assistant was not a negative one. She was more of a zero. And by that I mean she wasn't bad, but she wasn't good. She wasn't growing the business. But Paula is a plus one. And before I say all this, I want to let everyone listen to this. She's not for hire. You cannot steal her from me. I have cemented her firmly into the ground. She's mine. So leave me alone. Find your own Paula, right? But Paula will look at my business and go, hey, what about this? What about that? What about doing this? What about if we mail for this? How about if we – so she's actively trying to find ways to help me in my business. And that's when you know you have someone that takes care of you. I mentioned earlier in the call that I went to China. I was there for 10 days. I didn't take a computer. I had crappy internet access. When I came back, she had practically paid for my entire trip. She may have paid for all of it. Actually, I have to go back and look at the numbers. Well, how'd she do that? Well, she found affiliate products, she reviewed them, and she sent emails out about them. Now, we talked about it beforehand, but the fact of the matter is she did that. So that let me know that I had a plus one in Paula. So what I would tell you is go out, try and find someone in your business that can do that. And the other thing is, right, there are certain things that I mentioned before I'm great at, and there's other things that I absolutely hate. So what I'll do is, hey, Paul, I hate doing this. I love shooting videos. I hate editing. Here's the video. Go edit it. Put it online. Send me a link when it's done right away. And I never have to worry that she's not going to do that. So I would tell you, get to the point where you can afford to do that. You know, it's a considerable expense, but it's an expense that pays for itself. And really, when you hire people, they should never cost you money, right? They should never cost you money. Paula is an investment, but at the long, you know, at the end, when I compare what she made me compared to what her salary was, it should always be that I made money off that. And if you're not making money off the people that you hire, you don't need to be hiring them. That's my recommendation.
She certainly sounds like a diamond. What you need to do is clone her. You'd make an absolute fortune then.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think so. And I know they're out there, you know. I know there are great assistants out there. Unfortunately, you just have to go through a few of them and go, I don't ever want to do that again. Okay, this is not acceptable to me. And the other thing is this, and I've really learned this lesson a lot. One of the things I like to do when I'm not traveling is I like to travel. But I like to go to concerts, and I like to check out bands. And one of my favorite bands right now of the moment is a band called Honey Honey. It's just all lowercase, one word. I can't even put them in a genre. Just check them out. If you like them, you're welcome. If you don't, that's okay. Well, they did a campaign where if you helped sponsor their tour, that you got backstage access to hang with them. And I think it was $250. You got two tickets, and you got to hang with them for the night after the show. So a buddy of mine and I, a couple weeks ago, we jump in the truck, and we go down to Dallas, and we see their set, and they play for 45 minutes. And I go up and I introduce myself and I tell her who I am, and the lead singer knows me. She gives me a big hug, and we get to spend the next hour and a half to 2 hours drinking, playing pool, and having probably one of the best nights of my life with these guys. Just a great, enjoyable time. Now, I tell you that because I want you to understand how I was able to do that, because I paid for access to them. And what I would tell you is this: if you want good people, pay good money. I know it's daunting. Like when she told me what she charged per hour, I was like, wow, okay. It makes it serious for you, because when you're paying someone $3 an hour, you're like, okay, well, worst case, I've got to pay them $80 this week if I don't do anything. But when you're paying someone, you know, a ridiculously high salary, you're like, okay, I have to make this work. So I have to keep her busy. I have to keep me busy. So it keeps you motivated. But the quality of work that I get from her, you know, I couldn't get from someone that I spent $3 on, and it would take them three times longer. So to me, it's just spend the money for quality. Buy the stuff that's going to impact your business the best, and spend the money where it counts the most.
So she holds you accountable. And another thing that holds you accountable, presumably, is the mastermind groups that you're in.
Yeah, we sit down, and it's like, okay, here's what I want to accomplish this week. And she'll just kind of, hey, how's that coming? You know, any updates, anything I need to help you with, so on and so forth. So she's really good about that. And the mastermind, we do a little bit of accountability, but it's more ideas and this is what's working and stuff like that. But that naturally makes you accountable. You know, I mentioned that mastermind meeting I got out of yesterday. One of the guys told me what he made in the last weeks, and I was like, holy crap. Like, I can't believe you made that much in 2 weeks. But what does that do? That fires me up. That motivates me. That gives me energy. It's like, wow, if that guy can do it, you know, that guy's a freaking idiot. I'm a genius compared to that guy. I should make it twice as much. And of course, I kid. But it does inspire you, and it goes around the whole like begets like. You know, if you hang out with people that think $40,000 a year is big money, then that's probably what you're going to be happy with. But if you hang out with millionaires that are making six figures a month, you're probably not going to think that $40,000 a year is such a good idea. So that's what I would tell you is, you know, find a group that's going to hold you accountable, and find a group where you're either the dumbest person in the room or the person that's making the least amount of money. Because I guarantee you, you will rise with those people. And way back to the very beginning, you know, I somehow lucked my way into the Practical Profits group. And a lot of those guys were making high six figures, and a few of them have gone on to do seven figures a year. Well, when I met them, I was making $40,000 a year. The next year, I'd made six figures, and the year after that, I made six figures times two, you know? So my point is, would that have happened without their kind of nudging and stuff like that? Absolutely. But it would have happened a lot slower than I need to compare or match up to my peers.
So how old are you, Tim? Do you mind me asking?
Mind at all. I am 32 years old, but in 20 days from today, on the 28th of November, and yes, I do accept gifts, I will be 30 years old.
Because statistically, most successful entrepreneurs are sort of young men around 30-ish with no family, probably because they take more risks. They haven't got so many responsibilities, maybe not so much to lose.
Well, you know, I totally respect that. But if you look at, like, Will Matos, you know, Will and Jason are partners with Rapid Crush. Will, at the time that he quit his job, I think was making, I'm just going to say $200,000 a year, had a wife, had a baby, and I'm pretty sure had another baby on the way. And granted, they had built up and stuff like that, but now he's doing much, much better. You know, and what I would tell people is, you know, again, it goes back to the what's the worst. It's like, look, if you take 6 months and really make a go of this, and by that I mean really pour your heart and soul, the worst case is you got to go back and get another job. You know, that's okay. No one's ever going to take and fault you for taking the shot. But you're definitely going to hate yourself if you don't take the shot and you always wonder what if down the road.
Yeah, it's never too late to become what you might have been, is it? I know about 2 years ago, I went to Alex Jeffries' workshop in Las Vegas. And at the workshop, there was hardly any women there at all. Most of the people were young men in their sort of 30s. And then I went to another of his workshops in London in 2011, I think it was. And there was much more a variety of age group. There were far more women and a lot of older men. And I was listening to Jason Flaglian the other night, and he was saying that the majority of people that are searching to make money online these days are aged 50 to 55, which just goes to show you how desperate they're getting in the real world, where they have the just over broke jobs because there's no security in things, is there? So there's going to be, I think, a lot more competition in the future. What do you think?
And I've done that same survey, and it does surprise me to find out how many of my customers are my parents' age, frankly. I mean, there's no other way to say it, you know. But I see it in my mom. I mean, my mom was a lifelong employee. I get a lot of my fire and, you know, and sarcasm from her. And then one day she just decides, you know what, I'm going to open up my own sewing store. And it's like, what? You're going to what? And she did. It's very successful. And then she followed up with, well, now I'm going to open a restaurant. And now she's opening a third business. You know, and she's 60-plus years of age. So it really is never too late to begin, for sure. And the thing that really kind of – there's no other way to describe this. This is how I think of it in my mind. So please nobody be offended. But I call it my mom rule. And it is, I have to make stuff for my mom. When I make a product, I try to make it for my mom because my mom, I love her so much. But anytime she has to send a fax or an email or needs help with her computer, I get a call and I've got to go over and explain it to her for the 100th time. Like, okay, mom, you put the fax paper down here. You put the number there, right? So I have to keep stuff very simple. But if people don't do that and overcomplicate things, you know, they stress out their audience. Their audience gets lost. Like, whenever I'm doing something on the computer and I'm trying to show my mom, right, I'm double-clicking, I'm doing 15 things, I got 19 tabs open, and she's like, okay, that went way too fast. Can you slow down and show me one more time? And it's like, oh, yes, okay. Here's step by step by step. And that's another reason I think I do my the format of the reports the way I do them is because I want people to be able to go, okay, step one, got step one done. I've got step two done. I've got step three. And sadly, you know, to speak to the age thing, you know, it's getting harder to get a job. Jobs are paying less. And frankly, a lot of people didn't prepare for their retirement. And again, you know, I'm 32. I'm not even thinking about retirement, but I should be because I'm going to blink. And before I know it, it's going to be here. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of competition out there. Jobs are paying less. People don't have as much money. And they really are looking for a way to kind of leverage what they already know and already can do online for sure.
Well, if you keep doing things like that, Google will love you because apparently they cater to the grandma, don't they? in their searches, they want to be able to make it so simple that if your grandma typed in something, she would find exactly what she wanted.
Yeah, really, you do know good luck to yourself or to your customers by trying to overcomplicate things. One of the products I released wasn't the Easy Offline Form. I forget what it was. But one of the, believe it or not, the most refund request I got from it was, well, this is too simple. This is too easy. And I wrote all those people back, and I said, okay, here's your money. I appreciate that. But I asked them, I said, legitimately, did you want me to make this more difficult or hard for you? Like, I don't get people that feel like they have to struggle to make money. And it's got to be super hard and complicated. You know, I tell this, you know, every time I go to deposit a check from a local client or, you know, take money from PayPal to my local bank, I always ask, do I get a bonus for harder work? And they say, no, you don't get anything, right? A dollar's a dollar. So if a dollar's a dollar, wouldn't you want to find some simple and easy way to make money instead of something that's super hard and complicated and involves 19 different steps?
You're absolutely right there. Take the easy route every single time. That's what I say. Anyway, I think I've probably taken up an awful lot of your time, so thank you so much for sharing your story with me. It's been really great fun, and I've thoroughly enjoyed our little chat. I just love the way you've been able to show people that they can achieve their dreams if only they'll value their own experiences more and focus on the opportunities around them and, of course, just take action. But before I let you escape, I've just got one more question for you. And that is that I believe we're all on this earth for a reason and we have a purpose. So what would you like to have written on your headstone?
I don't know yet. You know, I'll be honest. I love marketing and I love what I do and I love business, but I don't know if it's my highest calling. I don't know if that's what I'm meant to do. I'm meant to do it right now, but 10 years, I'm not really sure. You know, I always think, could I provide more value in this world? So what I would like on my headstone is probably nothing to do with business. It's probably, you know, here lies Tim Castleman, you know, a good friend, a good husband, and, you know, if my wife and I ever decide to have children, a good father. You know, I value money is of great importance to a lot of people, and it's important to me based upon what it can do. You know, I all the trappings. You know, you can buy all the gadgets in the world. Trust me, I try to buy them all. But it doesn't fix you if you're a broken human being. But at the end of the day, it comes down to, you know, did you live? You know, did you love? Did you enjoy? Did you have a good friendship? And did you experience life? So many people, I talk to them, I go, oh, I'm going to China, I'm doing this. And they go, oh, I could never do that. And it's like, well, actually, you can. You just get a visa, you get a passport, and you go. But so many people think, I don't know if they think they'll do it later. They'll do it later in life. They may do it one day, but it's like, you got to get up, you got to start living today. So I would encourage people to take action, massive, massive action, to stick with something for the long term, to get out and enjoy life. And don't forget that, you know, we only get one go around at this, so definitely make the most of it.
I'd like on mine, she made a difference, I think, just something simple. But there's one epitaph I'll never forget, which reads, wherever you be, let your wind blow free, because that's what caused the death of me. So that's really somebody who needs to take care of his health.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Anyway, Tim, it's, as I say, it's been really wonderful. So where can people find out more about you?
The best way to do it is my blog, and that's at timothycastleman.com, TimothyCastleman.com. And that's my personal blog. I haven't updated it in a while. I'm getting ready to refresh it and start updating it with some more content. So I definitely will do that. But you can get on my email list there, and then I'll send you emails pretty regularly with some product recommendations, some stories about what's going on in my life and all that fun stuff. So that's the best place to reach me.
So have I been addressing you incorrectly then? I've been calling you Tim. Should I have called you Timothy?
I was in trouble. Yeah. That's Timothy and Timmy are the only two times I ever hear that is from my mom when I've done something wrong. So no, Tim is perfectly fine.
Well, I'm about her age, so that's probably why. Anyway, once again, thank you so much for the time and good night.
Back to you as well. Thanks, everybody.